This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, all of you guys and ghouls out there. This is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. Well, counting today, we are 10 days away from Halloween. That means that it's time for us to bring you a couple of episodes kind of on the bizarre and the spooky side. This week, we have a special guest who is someone who specializes in storytelling or bizarre magic. Which is it? You must decide. In addition to that, he also presents and conducts and produces murder mystery dinner theaters. Anything having to do with the bizarre and the unusual, this guy seems to be in the thick of it. Well, exactly what is the difference between bizarre magic and storytelling? Well, bizarre magic, actually, according to Magicpedia, is a branch of stage magic, like stage illusion, sleight of hand, or children's magic. The major difference is that bizarre magic uses storytelling and wordplay to a much greater degree, and less emphasis is placed on the manual dexterity of the performer or the complexity of his equipment. The experience is intended to be more akin to small, intimate theater than a conventional magic show. And what is storytelling? Well, again, back to Magicpedia, describes the social and cultural activity of sharing stories, sometimes with improvisation, theatrics, or embellishment. Every culture has its own stories or narratives, which are shared as a means of entertainment, education, cultural preservation, or instilling moral values. Crucial elements of stories and storytelling include plot, character, and narrative point of view. The term storytelling can refer in a narrow sense specifically to oral The term storytelling can refer to a narrow sense specifically to oral The term storytelling can refer in a narrow sense specifically to oral storytelling and also in a looser sense to techniques used in other media to unfold or disclose the narrative of a story. Whew. There you go. So that's what the difference is. Well, this week we are going to be visiting with Vince Wilson, who specializes in this form of entertainment and works in a place that he has put together called Poe's Magic Theater in Baltimore, Maryland. He has a lot of really interesting ideas that to discuss with you. So if you're thinking about putting together some sort of a spook show, a seance, some sort of a bizarre type of evening where that it will be defined by unusual and rather macabre storytelling or stories, then this is one I think that you will enjoy. And even if you don't, it's interesting to hear a perspective from someone how that they come at magic from a different angle and how that they have found success. But before we get started, I want to remind everybody that for the last 2 weeks, we've had a contest for an opportunity to win one set of books that are being offered by Gabe Fiore. A couple of weeks ago, we featured his podcast, and he has this set of two books that shows the poster collections that was sold at auction of Norm Nielsen's. Anyhow, that if you stick around till at the end of this podcast, we'll announce the two winners. If you didn't get a chance to enter the contest, then it's important to keep up from week to week with these podcasts and listen to them, or at least to subscribe to the pod letter, because there you will be among the first to learn about any upcoming and ongoing contests. Well, again, 'tis the season, or at least the spooky season, and the bizarre time for us to welcome this week's guest, Mr. Vince Wilson, here on The Magic Word. Today I have with me someone who is a storyteller, and some people consider that to be a bizarre form of magic. We're going to get into that. And storytelling is just a different way of putting a different twist on some kinds of standard tricks sometimes, but making them with an interesting outcome that might be a little bit more macabre or mysterious or something like that. And in addition to that, that he also works doing murder mystery shows and with a variety of things from to Sherlock Holmes and Jack the Ripper and, golly, all kinds of things. I think it's going to be great to get into that here this time of the season. So please welcome my friend, from the Baltimore area. This is Vince Wilson. Hey there, Vince.
Hey, how you doing? Thank you for having me on, Scott. I really appreciate it. I'm really excited to be here.
Well, thank you very much for being available. I'm glad that you were. So Baltimore, Maryland, is where you are from, and you kind of travel back and forth, but you live near there now. Is that right?
That is correct. Yep. I'm always a short drive away from my hometown of Baltimore City. Mm-hmm. It's where I started my career many years ago. Over 20 years ago, I was doing bizarre magic and seance performance in the Fells Point area of Baltimore. Eventually, I had the Harper in Harper's Ferry. I had the Haunted College Parlor Show. Hmm. I did murder mysteries, seances, and more storytelling magic there. And I did that for about 5 or 6 years, and then moved back to near the Baltimore area and opened up Poe's Magic Theater in 2019. I perform all over the country. I've also performed in Italy, Switzerland, and England overseas.
Yeah, that's interesting. I want to delve into a little bit about Edgar Allan Poe here. Why don't we jump on that then right now? Because I know that Baltimore is Poe's hometown. Isn't that correct?
But yeah, he's originally from Boston. He spent some time in Philadelphia and Richmond. But he died in Baltimore. Okay. Baltimore was definitely his favorite place, and much of his works were written there as well. Mm-hmm. There were mysterious circumstances regarding his death.
Well, that was what I was thinking. For some reason, that Baltimore sticks in my mind as being related to Edgar Allan Poe. When I think of him, I think of that. And Poe's home is there. It seems like I had visited. Doesn't he have a historical museum or a site or something there?
Yep, the Edgar Allan Poe House and Museum is in Baltimore City. I mean, there's similar houses. Of course, I'm a little biased by saying that it is the best one.
Sure.
Okay. I work very closely with the Edgar Allan Poe House Museum in Baltimore, and I do a lot of Poe events. I also do ghost tours at Edgar Allan Poe's gravesite from time to time as well.
Yeah. And so was that just kind of a natural progression because that you lived there in Baltimore and you knew about the Poe connection, I guess, and thought that would be natural?
Yeah, that is correct. Yeah, that would be a good way of putting that, actually. It was just a natural association. So involved in the mystery arts, mm-hmm. which include magic and murder mysteries, a little bit of acting and, the murder mystery and seance performances as well. It just kind of progressed to that. Just the mystery of Edgar Allan Poe is a big contributing factor to an influence on how I do performances.
So you've been really more interested in the past several years about the bizarre or the storytelling side of it rather than the mechanics and sleight of hand and doing walk around restaurant or cocktails kind of a thing, I guess.
That's correct. You know, I think that's more of a, I do all that too. Mm-hmm. I do strolling and, you know, when it's required of me, but I always incorporate some aspect of storytelling to that, even if it's a short, very quick narrative over the bit I'm doing. Mm-hmm. Even if it's a card trick or a haunted key or a glorpy effect or mm-hmm. something like that. I still add a point to it, you know, a narrative. You know, the most famous magicians in the world are storytellers, if you think about it. You know, you name the most famous, and I'm talking about the general public, not magicians. Name the most famous card magician in the world.
Probably Shin Lim, I'm guessing, since he had won America's Got Talent and all that.
That's fair enough. He does other stuff too. That's a good point. Now, name the most famous mentalist in the world, but don't say Darren Brown. He does too much magic now.
Okay, I understand. Well, I don't know how much that Max Maven is known in the general public as much as he is revered within the magic community, but I know that he has had a lot of network shows and appearances, and so I'm going to say maybe David Berkowitz. We could talk about in history or just the last few decades, or
talk about the general. If you walked out in the street and you said, "Who? Do you name a mentalist? Name a card magician? Name a storyteller?" What did he come up with? And I'll tell you something they probably wouldn't say, but it would still be accurate technically. Would be David Copperfield, who's arguably the most famous magician, period, in the entire world.
Right. Well, you narrow that down to mentalist, and that's why I was thinking Copperfield, first of all, as far as being the first name that would come, or Chris Angel, that would be names that would come to people straight away. But I hadn't really thought so much of Copperfield as a mentalist.
Well, I'm sorry. I kind of segued into that poorly, but let me restart that.
Okay.
The most famous storytelling magician in the world is David Copperfield.
Fair enough. I agree. Because he has these vignettes in which he tells a story about his grandparents or snow or different kinds of things. And it does tell a story, whether he's talking or not. It's just through the music and through the staging and choreography that is so beautiful.
Yeah, the point of the previous segues was to say that for as far as the general public is concerned, you know, those other categories of magic have not created a lot of fame for magicians. And I'm sure I'm going to get bad feedback from that, saying that out loud. but truth be told, there's not, you know, Darren Brown does magic and mystery and mentalism, and he and hypnosis, and combines this all into his stage show. A lot of people think of only his TV shows, but you've ever seen him perform publicly. There's a lot of magic in his show. When he performs on stage at an arena or something like that, you know, David Copperfield, as you know, does the vignettes, like you said, or the little stories at the beginning of each segment before he goes into it. And the magicians of old, to a greater scale, you know, do you have a Keller or Thurston or Houdini poster?
Of course.
Yeah. And a lot of magicians do. But what would those magicians think of a lot of modern magic?
That is too gimmicky and not entertaining.
That's fair. Now, of course, their magic would probably not translate well today either.
It's a good point. People today, for an example, when Houdini would stand behind the curtain and he was already out of the chains and he was just reading the newspaper and banging on the curtain to kind of make people wonder. But for 12 or 15 minutes, apparently people would sit in their seats just wondering if he's going to get out behind the curtain. They wouldn't do that today.
Some stories say he was back there for 30 minutes or so.
Yes. Well,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And Keller and Thurston and their ilk, Dante, for example, they would come out, pontificate for minutes on end and narrate their story about this is what's about to happen. You're going to see the most startling, amazing thing, you know, brought from the Far East, you know, and they would just go on and on and on. And then they would go about and silently do this with an orchestra playing in an orchestra pit. And their shows were so long. They were an evening of entertainment. They had the shows had a break. You had to have an intermission in order to get up, walk around, get a drink, some food, and come back into the show again. They would have, you know, stage productions, and it had as many as 50 people in that production. And there was a lot of storytelling and a lot of narration in regards to that. The modern bizarrist, thanks to influences like Tony Andruzzi and Eugene Berger and other great contributors to storytelling magic, explained it's hard, it's not easy, and there's a fair stereotype of the storytelling magician being, you know, 10 minutes of story and a self-working trick at the end. You know, that is surely there's good examples of that happening. But in every category or genre of magic, there are magicians who don't get it, that do tricks and that sort of thing, and they're fine. And people will be amazed by the dexterity they have, but they'll never go further than where they are. You know, the secret to at least one secret to success is luck. That's true. But the other secret is, you know, being unique and different. All right.
True.
You know, not being another cookie cutter magician. All right.
Everyone else is just an imitator.
Exactly. Having a unique spin, something that makes you different, makes you stand out, the way you dress, for example, the way you act, the way your tricks are done. If you're doing the directions out of your card trick box, if you're just doing verbatim what that ebook you read says, then you're probably not going to go much further than where you are. And there are exceptions to this. There are certainly people who have become moderately successful because they were in the right place at the right time. But that's the exception more than it is the rule. What bizarre magic and storytelling can bring to a magician, even someone who's not interested in going down that path, is the ability to reinvent themselves, make themselves unique. At the very least, come up with a good theme for your show, for example. You know, it's, Halloween and Christmas and that sort of thing, right around the corner, of course. Or
right.
October is basically the month of Halloween.
Correct, yeah.
So, have you ever been asked by someone who is willing to hire you, can you do a Christmas show or a Halloween show?
Sure, specifically.
Correct. Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. With that now, kind of a theme, sure.
Yeah, exactly. So most successful magicians who have been doing it for years and full time will know that means I have to theme my show, like fully theme it. The tricks, what I wear, what I do, what I say. A lot of magicians don't know that. They'll go into their performance with any card, any number. Sort of, I can say that, right? I can say that name.
Sure.
Of a
trick. Yeah.
Okay.
Right. Hey, can bleep, sure.
Yeah, bleep that if you can.
Yeah, no.
All right, any card, any number. And they'll just have like pumpkins on the back of the cards, or they'll reference a Halloween story, and then the show's just normal. Or worse yet, they'll just show up in a jack-o'-lantern blazer and skull tie or something like that, and still do a regular show. Exactly.
Right.
But bizarre magic and storytelling magic, that can help you really script a show out offer yourself and your audiences something completely unique that they wouldn't get anywhere else. You know, you're not a generic magician anymore, cookie-cutter mm-hmm. magician. Mm-hmm. You've gone beyond that, and that's what storytelling and narrative does. And once again, you don't have to do the whole package deal. You don't have to be sitting in a corner in the basement with candles all over you, with like old leather books and wooden boxes all over the place. You can have embrace some aspects of this and help your career out a little bit just by being a little different. The bottom line, what I'm trying to get to, bizarre magic just means unique. That's all it really means.
Yeah, and I think also what you're talking about as far as sharing some stories in your presentation, that it doesn't necessarily have to be all of that all the time. When you were talking about when you're still doing some strolling or if you're a restaurant or whatever, I think it is important that you add those kinds of elements. That is something that would be storytelling or bizarre type of a twist with a trick. Because in my opinion and from my experience, it seems that the audience or the people who are you're showing it to, that group of three or four or six or whatever, seem to remember that longer and out of proportion to the rest of whatever that you've been doing. In other words, if I'm doing some great sleight of hand or I'm doing some other funny and entertaining things, but whenever that I get real serious and I still do some sort of sleight of hand and or a self-working gimmick trick or something, but if I weave a story around that, that's what they remember more because you've touched them in some way emotionally.
That's perfect. You actually worded that probably better than I could have. Remember, you could tell a kid, beware of strangers.
Mm-hmm.
And they might understand that, but they'll remember the three bears, Goldilocks and the three bears, for the rest of their lives.
Good point.
You know? Yeah, the Little Red Riding Hood story, Cinderella, these allegories, analogies, these metaphors, you know, they resonate in your consciousness and subconscious for the rest of your life. If you tell a good story, that will resonate with the audience. And speaking of, like, knowing the names of tricks and exposing secrets and things like that, a good bizarre magic routine or a good story or narrative that goes over your effects as you're doing them, we like to say experiments sometimes when we're doing a paranormal show.
Sure.
When you're doing your tricks, basically, a good narrative over top of that can hide the ability for them to Google it later. You know.
Good point.
It makes it more difficult for them to look know what they're looking for when the story is more important than the handling of the trick.
Right. I have something that I do occasionally around this time of the year, in which that I would have a miniature invisible deck and then a small skeleton hand that looks like a baby's skeletal hand, basically, with some lace that is glued around it, and then use a Glorpy hanky for all that. And the presentation, obviously, is talking about a child has passed, and this is the size of the card deck that you used to play with, and if they were going to be handling the cards, it'd be small like this. And anyhow, there's a good presentation. You can imagine, essentially, a couple of things. It's just Invisible Deck and Glorpy, but it's the accoutrements, everything else you put around it, and the story that you weave around it, that suddenly goes from something trivial and maybe funny and somewhat memorable into something that will be completely memorable and non-trivial that they're going to talk about for a long time. Similarly, like one time that I had, just as an impromptu thing, I was checking into a hotel with somebody, and they said, hey, this guy's a magician. Why don't you show the registration clerk a trick? And I did use the Invisible Deck. I just happened to have one with me, pulled it out. And so, but I gave a reading of what this card was that she had selected. And then at the end saying, and you had selected the Four of Clubs. She said, yeah, fine. But how did you know that I was going to be traveling in 6 months with my cousin to London? And that was what she was focused on, was the reading and not the trick. It was kind of like that really opened my mind and my eyes.
You're absolutely correct. You know, the like making a little hand, a monkey's paw, for mm-hmm. example, you know, and making that part of your story, you know, wish fulfillment and the consequences of not knowing what you're asking for, you know, referencing demons and that sort of thing, or angels or intervention from divinity of some sort.
Some people
sort.
Really freak out on that, Vince, as
oh,
you
yeah,
can imagine.
You have to be careful, of course, but and know your audience.
right. But, and sometimes I think I do. And I remember just doing a color Monty one time for a group. I was strolling outside in a picnic. And it was just a color Monty card trick, and this lady got up from the table and ran screaming. She thought I was the devil. It's like, wait, I didn't give a bizarre presentation. It was just that it impacted her so much.
Well, a famous magician once said that, a very famous magician said that everyone leaves my show knowing that it's not real magic, and if someone does leave, then they have mental illness. I'm paraphrasing only a little bit, I disagree with that assessment. I mean, I agree that you can't convince everyone that you're not doing sorcery. There's always, if you perform for hundreds of people a year, someone in your audience is going to think that you're in connection with the devil.
Even if you're not presenting it that way.
Even if you're not presenting it that way,
right.
You could be doing just the most. Like, so you can do scarves and linking rings and cups and balls, all the standards of classic magic.
Right.
And, you know, but everyone knows, should know, is a trick. And they'll walk away thinking that you're a wizard and that the forces of darkness are assisting you from behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
There's YouTube videos that are hours long on this topic where certain individuals really believe that magicians are in league with the devil himself.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
The storytelling magic, of course, you know, my stance on this is that if you're performing at a magic show and it says such and such magic theater, then you've done your job at
hint,
that
hint.
Point.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. get a clue, basically.
Yeah.
You know, but still, even though I've done these performances at magic venues and it says magic show, I still get people coming up to me at the end and saying, I said, are you a medium? And I'll say, no, I'm a double extra large.
Yeah, double X. Well, my business partner, Jamie Salinas, and I do seances that I always begin by telling people, for those who believe, no explanation is necessary. For those who don't believe, no explanation will suffice. And that's the best way of trying to identify the groups, because there are three people who are distinct categories of people who will attend a seance: those who are just coming for general fun and just kind of want to hang out, those who have a true belief that they might be able to contact the afterlife, and those who are skeptics and just don't believe that at all. So you are not going to change their opinions, but you're going to perhaps reaffirm whatever it is that is their belief. And so there's no sense. It's, I guess, like politics and religion. People have their own tribe. They have their own belief system, and you're not going to really change it for the most part.
Well, here's a controversial topic for you.
Okay.
All right. No one thinks you're reading minds. Okay. No one thinks that. Let me reiterate. no one thinks that you're a mind reader.
Even psychics. So when you walk in, there are people, as you have had people also tell you, and they've told me, but I've gone to the psychic, and they didn't know anything about me, and they told me about my uncle and et cetera.
To clarify the definition, all right?
Reading a mind, like
you're Professor X from the X-Men.
Yeah.
You know, that you can go into someone's brain and just grab information out, mm-hmm. all right? If you had that ability genuinely, then you should be locked up in a government lab somewhere, okay? Mm-hmm. That would be terrifying if someone could actually walk up to you and just grab information right out of your brain. They would not be on stage doing that sort of thing. People do believe. Now the psychic entertainers who do it the right way, they're talking about impressions. I have a feeling, or the spirits are telling me, or something along those lines.
I see the difference. That's
what the difference is. If you're saying I can grow into your brain and just grab information out, the suspension of disbelief is gone at that moment. All right, for the people, because people will believe in angels and demons. They'll believe in Bigfoot, aliens, chupacabras, all this stuff. But there's limits to what they're believing because these things have precedence in pop culture, supposedly reality TV. There are TV shows that hunt for Bigfoot. There's UFO documentaries. You know, regardless of how you feel about these things exist and people believe they are real to a degree. Enough people do anyway. And of course, we grow up with the faith of our parents and our families, and that influences us as well. But no one raises you on stories of mind reading, and there's no documentaries or shows about the guy who robbed a bank because he knew the numbers to the combination of the safe from reading the bank teller's mind or won the lottery. There's no precedent for that, so we don't buy into it as much. If you go on the stage and say, I'm picking up an impression, which a lot of mentalists do, those mentalists are more believable, all right? Mm-hmm. But if you're just saying, I'm reading your mind like a page from a book, some of that suspension of disbelief is gone. And those are balances that it's very difficult for some people to figure out over a period of even a whole career.
One of the things that you had, to back up for just a moment, I thought was interesting that you had said then also is that about how that you have to look at the script and actually spend some time writing a script, memorizing it and practicing it. And I think that's what differentiates magicians from mentalists or bizarrists or whatever. And that is that I think it's easy to buy a trick from the dealer that is the trick du jour, basically, because there are things coming out quite literally every day, and they're a self-working kind of thing, and it comes with their own pattern and everything like that. Whereas, if you're going to be writing a script, you're actually having to talk to the audience. You have to listen to what they're saying and be able to react accordingly. So it's like juggling. I remember talking to Pat Hazel. Pat was telling me that he respected jugglers more than magicians because they actually had to rehearse and practice with juggling, whereas if you can buy a trick and have your cards printed tomorrow and do shows by this weekend, a juggler, you can't necessarily. It takes more time and effort like that. Likewise, what I'm trying to say ultimately is I believe that mind readers, mentalists, and bizarrists have to spend a lot more time scripting that and understanding their audience.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You know, like I do a B-wave routine, mm-hmm. and normally I open up with the patter about the probability and or impressions or reading someone or getting a feeling about someone I just met. Said, do you feel like we have a connection or we can establish a connection and I remember at one time I forgot I was having it was a long day. And I was at the valet parking at the hotel, mm-hmm. and I was, and they said, "Oh, you're the magician who's performing tonight." I said, "Yes." And they said, "Can you show me a trick?" And I said, I could see my car coming around a corner, right? I said, "All right, real quick." So I pull it out and I just start doing it without the initial pattern.
Yeah.
And the first thing that came out of his mouth was, "Well, you didn't show me the queens. You're telling me about these queens, but you didn't show it to me." He was analyzing it because there was nothing to open up, no connection to this effect. It was just
you were getting to the climax too quick without the build-up.
Exactly. That's right. And it occurred to me like, man, it's true. Like without the at least the initial setup, it's just a trick. Immediately, it's a trick. There's no reason for it, no motive, there's no purpose, and no definitely no connection between me and the individual I'm performing for. You know, so all they see is the mechanics of it, that you're telling them it's this thing without showing it to them, without that initial build-up to that.
Well, there are quick tricks. There are 30-second tricks, 60-second tricks, what I've called elevator tricks, that you can quickly show someone that he just happened to catch you at a bad time and the wrong trick in your hand that you happened to pull out. It could have been, in hindsight, oh, I should have done this. I know what you're thinking afterwards. It's like, why didn't I do such and such?
Yep, exactly. Yeah, any other thing would have been. But it's also a valid point about connections. You know, that would have been a 100 other tricks that would have been better for the situation, but it made me really rationalize that some kind of story is important, even if it's 5 seconds long. Mm-hmm. You know, just the two sentences of, you know, hey, while I've been standing here, I feel like we had a connection. Even saying that would have opened up, and I didn't do any of that. I just said, I have four queens.
Yeah.
You know, that's where it went wrong.
Right.
You know, at that very moment, you know, and of course, there's people are listening to this right now. I said, oh, I never would have made that mistake. Yeah, sure. Sure. You have. You've done worse. I'm sure.
You've had other mistakes. It's just you haven't had that mistake, perhaps.
Yeah, you haven't had that mistake.
Exactly. I want to go back again to Edgar Allan Poe because it does just fascinate me. So when you are now, I saw something in one of your videos that you were performing in the Lord Something Hotel, and they've got a Poe
Hotel. Yeah. And they've got a theater.
A Poe's theater. Okay. So they really do obviously play up on Edgar Allan Poe there.
I'm actually the owner of Poe's Magic Theater in Baltimore.
Oh, are you? Okay.
Yes. Yeah. And so go ahead.
Do you tell stories then, about Poe or, and about his life or about the stories he's written or a little bit of both, or how is that?
Traditionally it is a magic theater like Smoke and Mirrors or House of Cards or something like that.
But is it a one man show with you, or do you bring in other people then?
I do one man shows there, but I host other people. We've had a lot of new Eric Jones, Randy Shine, David Parr, you know, among other famous magicians and recognized magicians around the country. Harley Newman performed there. Peter Samuelson, for example, has performed there. And we constantly bring in new magicians to perform there. If 2020 had gone according to plan, we would have had weekly performances over there. And next year, we're going to have weekly performances all the time, and we're going to start doing that as soon as we can.
Are they mainly magicians and sometimes comedy magicians, so it's a variety, or do you try to keep something because of the theater having the Poe tie?
We don't tell them you have to do a Poe magic trick.
But something more serious. In other words, it's bizarre, mentalist, or magic.
Our branding will focus on top tier magicians. I mean, you can come in there and do like the whole show based on card tricks, but they have to be the best card tricks.
Okay.
You know,
yeah. It engages. Jamie and Swiss, for an example, coming in.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. But, you know, within the rates of a 100-person theater can fit, you know, afford to pay.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not going to have Jim Lim perform there anytime soon.
Yeah.
or David Copperfield.
Yeah.
But the Poe's Magic Theater has, you know, it seats 100 people. We bring in, talented magicians. We have a focus on connections with the audience. If that's something you can do, then you can perform at Poe's Theater. If you can connect and resonate with your audience and engage that audience, that's what we're really looking for. And everyone can make that claim, but not everyone can really do that consistently, if that makes sense.
No, it makes perfect sense. I remember when the Magic Island was open here, and Scott Hollingsworth was the entertainment director at the time, and he said, if I can have someone who would hit every once in a while and would just absolutely kill versus someone who had a very good, solid, steady show every show, I would take that person rather than the first one who would kill occasionally.
Mm-hmm.
So you need someone who's really going to be just a thoroughbred to continue to run.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You know, and everyone has bad nights and everyone makes mistakes,
sure.
And that's fine. But yeah, we're definitely looking for a consistent talent that is known for being consistently engaging with the audience. You know, people that have exposure, established names at the very least, and we do give new people who are new and up and coming opportunities as well. Mm-hmm. So that's definitely, we don't want to exclude people who are talented and haven't had a chance.
Sure. But
so there's all sorts of possibilities there.
Everybody's got to have some place to be bad also.
Exactly.
And have a bad show now and again.
Yeah. I always tell people, I said, before you judge, you got to see them one more time, at least. Mm-hmm. You know, watch a magician twice. You know, I certainly have been surprised by magicians who are, you know, go there and just like, oh, this isn't that great. And then I see them again. That's actually pretty good. Mm-hmm. I want to see someone twice before I make an opinion, because you're allowed to have a bad night.
Right. Well, and likewise, they might have just killed in that show, and then you see them a second time. It's like, that wasn't quite as good as I remember.
Exactly, yeah.
Didn't go other ways, too. I want to go into a different direction here for a moment, that you also combine the shows you're doing there then with the murder mystery. Is that a dinner theater kind of a thing? And you do those in the Poe Theater as well? Or?
That's correct. So the murder mystery, I always loved murder mysteries. So I grew up in the 70s and 80s, mm-hmm. All right? Part of the reason I like the spooky stuff is because of In Search Of with Leonard Nimoy.
Okay.
That's incredible. You know, and you had these documentaries that came on late at night on Friday and Saturday, and Creature Feature on Saturday night, my local area. That's what got me into the spooky stuff. But I also grew up in the heyday of television detective shows, Heart to Heart, Remington Steele, Moonlighting, these wonderful shows. And there was this episode, this type of episode that was a cliche, a trope that happened all the time. The detectives get invited to a murder mystery weekend. A real murder takes place, and he had to solve it by the end of the weekend. Now, excluding the real murder, because that's bad business. there's always these tropes, like they're stuck there, there's a storm outside. Moonlighting had an episode where they're on this runaway train. There was an episode, another series had it on a boat, and then one is in a mansion with the roads cut off, and mm-hmm. that sort of thing. But they always get stuck there. The police can't help out. They had to solve the murder before they themselves are killed. But I thought it was interesting, the initial concept. The baseline is this. You actually you're trying to solve a mystery as an amateur detective. Mm-hmm. If you've ever been to a murder mystery, this is not what happens today. Have you ever been to a murder mystery dinner theater
before? I haven't. I've wanted to, but I haven't attended.
So, spoilers.
Okay.
And there are exceptions. There are people that do it differently. They do it sort of like a escape room sort of by concept. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, murder mysteries are a cliched trope of a show. I'm trying not to be too harsh. They're very entertaining. Don't get me wrong. If it's got good actors, it's a great show, and you'll have fun. But that element is not there. That show will unfurl the same way every single night it's performed. Mm-hmm. You don't solve the mystery. You don't look for clues. You might have someone like elbow you in the side and go, so who do you think the killer is? But you're going to find out no matter what. You're not going to be involved in solving that. All right. That's how these murder mysteries go. They are theatrical performances with a troupe of actors. They are not a crime solving evening.
So you're not given a set of clues to try and go and figure out the puzzle then necessarily, and then ask the actors what happened. Okay. I didn't know that. I wonder if there are murder mystery dinner theaters that do that, or are you saying
there's a few exceptions out there?
Okay.
Do your research if that's what you want to do, but you're going to get an entertaining show anyway. So this aspect of modern murder mysteries, where the vast majority of them are just plays, although good ones, but they're still plays, bothered me because I grew up on the idea of the murder mystery solving concept.
Yeah.
That's what I want to offer the audience. But there was something else that bothered me, too. I didn't want people to fail. I don't want you to pay $75 to $100, and that's how much these cost sometimes. Mm-hmm. To come spend an evening at a dinner show where you can be wrong at the end of the evening and feel like you failed at it. That's what the problem I have with the escape rooms. It's like you're spending $25 to go into the escape room.
And you may not get out.
And you might not get out, and you fail at it. I wanted my audience to succeed, and that's where the magic comes in. Now, some people have told me that it's not a completely original idea, that other people have tried to combine magic with murder mysteries before. And I think I can't remember the gentleman's name who did that years ago. There might have been a couple of people, but it's still those things are still a obvious trick. And there is it reveals a clue somehow. Being a bizarrist who does a lot of spooky stuff, the ghosts are helping you out. The murder victim died, the spirit wants revenge, and they're helping you solve the mystery. That's why these things happen.
I see.
And the clues are revealed. So at the end of the show, without giving away too many secrets of how it works, you always solve it. But you think you're the one who solved it.
So you make it seem so more like the participants are engaged in helping to solve the crime rather than exactly. The actors going through the play and going into the audience and talking to people. But essentially that's part of the play and they solve it at the end by themselves.
They will always, quote unquote, figure it out.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Sleight of hand and a little, I guess I could just say it out loud, multiple outs.
Sure.
Always make sure they have the right answer.
Well, and that was what I was going to ask you then, too. I understand multiple outs, but also are there multiple endings so that if they take it down a different way, perhaps that, like Clue, for an example. Mm-hmm. Maybe, remember the movie Clue had, half dozen
three different endings.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. The Clue with Tim Curry had three different endings in it.
Mm-hmm.
And now when you buy it or rent it on streaming, you'll see all three of them. But originally when it came out, depending on what evening you saw it on, you could see a different ending.
Yes.
So there's, for one of my shows, for example, I have a Titanic show. I have a Jack the Ripper show. The Titanic show has four different endings and the Jack the Ripper show has five different endings.
Wow. Yeah. And these are all for families or are they for adults? 21?
I have everything from G to rated R. The Jack Ripper is rated R. And I have my Mummy show is PG, I suppose. And I have a pirate show. I only do one pirate show a year. That's for the Marriott Hotel at Bethany Beach in Delaware. And that is they were offering the pay was too good to not come up with a way of doing. It's one of those things.
Yeah, sure.
So I hire an assistant to play a female pirate who I'm training to in piracy, and we're trying to find a treasure. Because the hotel actually came up to me and said, "Do you do a murder mystery for kids?" And I said, "No." This
going to kill a clown or what?
Murder is part of the show.
Yeah.
I said I came up with the hidden pirate chest idea, and I was able to still keep within brand by incorporating the local, yeah, there's also local history. All my shows have real history and stories in it. Like you can people will go, "Oh, I've heard of that." In all my shows, the murder mystery shows specifically.
But not necessarily locally. I was just thinking The Mummy, for an example, would not be something that would relate to Baltimore.
Are you sure?
Okay, here we go.
Every city has a museum in it. So if I'm performing in Philadelphia, I have a letter from the Philadelphia Museum of Natural History.
Mm-hmm.
That says these artifacts have been loaned to you from the museum. Please take good care of them. And it's signed by the director of the museum.
I see.
Every show is customized for that place. I try to create an atmosphere of suspension of disbelief. If my Titanic show is about these people that survived the Titanic only to die under mysterious circumstances months later in the year 1912. So I will have these artifacts, and I justify the existence of artifacts by a letter that is in a plastic sleeve on the table that says, "Please take good care of these artifacts. Sincerely, the director of this museum."
Mm-hmm.
And there's always a seal from a local regional museum at the top, or a historical society. It's the Baltimore Historical Society, the Philadelphia Historical Society, Chicago Historical Society. I have a letter. I just go to Google Images, I download that logo, or I make one up and I put it on top of that, and no one's going to like question that at the moment, and it looks legitimate enough, and they just go with the story.
Yeah. Well, they come to with a certain belief to begin with, knowing, hey, we're going to be having some fun, and some of this may be legitimate and some may not, and they're just along for the ride. They're not going to be questioning that because you're building something around that. Likewise, in the seances that Jamie and I have done in the past, we have legitimatized Jack the Ripper being in Houston because we were talking about one of the people who was a suspect of being Jack the Ripper who had sailed to the U.S. and there were Ripper-esque styles murders in the East Coast and also all the way down to Galveston. And because of the timing of this and when that this particular place is was open where we do our seances, that it was a popular watering hole. And it was also, it wasn't a brothel, but it was a, because there are no rooms there, but it was a place where that women of the evening would work. And so he could have come looking for women, but decided it's too busy. And anyhow, there are things that we have said. And then also that Jamie has some things saying, well, here are some artifacts of the age, not necessarily, again, you don't want to have a leap of faith. Well, this is actually from the whistle that the cop used back then. But like I found this on eBay, this is the type of a whistle that the Bobby would have used back then to kind of get into that mood, because it would be too much of a leap of faith, I believe, if you are trying to say this was an exact whistle that Officer McAllen had used that night there.
Are you sure?
On Whitechapel Road.
Well, yeah. There's a website called murderauction.com.
Really?
Website.
With real stuff from murders?
That's correct. They sell murderabilia, it's called.
Oh, my gosh.
So I, at my Jack the Ripper show, I reference that website and say, I have acquired a letter from Scotland Yard from the murder auction website and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. So one item you can get away with, like if you said like every artifact is from that, there's no way that anyone would believe you. But if you said this one item mm-hmm. has a connection to this murder or this
An authentic connection.
Mm-hmm. And it could be just a check stamp or a hotel ticket, a receipt. People believe that because they know that exists. That mm-hmm. there are people that, you know, like there's always a paper trail.
Sure.
You know, so you can believe, you can bring that connection right into your performance by having this replica artifact that people, there's this, as long as it's not a crazy thing, like this is the knife that killed that Jack the Ripper used. You know, I have an actual 19th century surgical amputation knife that I use for display during the Jack the Ripper show, but I never imply that it's Jack the Ripper's knife. I just say this is the knife he might have, a style of knife he might have used in his killings. But I have a letter that said, where I say this is from Scotland Yard because I can acquire that by a believable chain of events.
That makes sense, and I like that because it is believable when you're talking about the website. That, I mean, that's all news to me that you just told me, but it's something that the listeners or anybody who's viewing your show afterwards can go and look up. What was that again?
Murderauction.com.
Murderauction.com. We'll go and Google the site and say, oh, my gosh, and it's a real thing, and then it will the belief will become real.
That's right. Yep. You sold it believably. So when I used to perform that at the Haunted Cottage in Harper's Ferry, it was my parlor show there. The first couple of times I did, until it caught on that I was doing these shows, of course, but the first couple of times I did it, I sold it. I had two assistants that helped me out, and I sold it so well that every once in a while, I would imply a couple of shows. I implied that there was a news crew coming on Monday after the weekend to actually watch me pass these artifacts over to Scotland Yard, since I acquired them, since, you know, to return them back to it.
On loan.
And people would come up to me at the end of the show and say, and this is not a joke, they would say, what channel should we watch to see you pass these on?
Yes.
And at that point, I had to say, I want to be perfectly honest with you.
You busted me.
You busted me. Yeah. I said, yeah, you got me. I would love to have said, I'd love to say to some people, and I'm sure people are going to say, you should have just told them channel 13 or 45 or something like that and gone with it. But I couldn't do that. I just,
Some cable news that you don't subscribe to or whatever. You mentioned Harper's Ferry. Then also, wasn't there something about Harper's Ferry that figured into the Civil War?
Yeah, John Brown Raid is what is one of the things that may have probably contributed to the beginning of the Civil War.
That's what I was thinking. So do you play on that also?
Oh, yeah. That was definitely a part of the story. In fact, the Haunted Cottage was actually originally called the Booth House, because John Wilkes Booth stayed there the night that John Brown was hanged in Harper's Ferry, or Charlestown specifically nearby. Because he did a raid on Harper's Ferry a couple of years before the beginning of the Civil War, which kind of created a lot of the ideas in the South that there is a war coming, basically. That definitely contributed to a lot of the turmoil and stress. I mean, it probably would have happened anyway, but it made it's theoretically possible that the John Brown raid made it happen sooner.
Right, and so there are a lot of Civil War historians and people who are coming in then to begin with, and so you can kind of play on that and build on it.
I had to make sure my facts were right. Like the Jack Ripper shows, when I did the Jack Ripper show, I had to be a Ripperologist, which is a thing, by the way.
Yes.
I got certifications to people at the end of the show. Mm-hmm. It's a certificate saying that you are a Ripperologist because now you have a above average understanding of the Jack the Ripper murders.
Right.
And you get to keep that certificate and frame it on your wall. And so I've had people come to me years later and say, I still have that certificate hanging on my wall from coming to your show.
I was the medium for the official Houdini seance some many years ago, and I had a lot of knowledge and read a lot of books about Houdini, but I really had to be the expert. So people who were asking me before or afterwards when we were, because it was open to the public, then they sold tickets during the cocktail hour and of asking me questions, and I had to know my stuff. And the same thing whenever we do our Jack the Ripper seances, you do have to know that stuff because there are going to be people who are coming in, and it just takes one person to really bust you bad you really don't know what you're talking about.
Actually, that's what you want. That's not what you don't want to hear is someone go, actually, sir.
Yeah, yeah, back at the date was.
Exactly. They want to correct you on the dates and times. The Titanic show is notorious for that. When I first started doing it, I had a pretty good understanding of Titanic, but then I had people that were huge fans of the history, and then we had people that were fans of the movie, and the movie was mostly historically accurate, except for made-up characters, and but it had enough real information that people used that, so I had to make I doubled down on knowing about the Titanic too, and the history of Egyptology. I actually listened to a Greek Courses Plus course on Egyptian history in order to get the mummy show correct. That was a pain, but it was interesting. Yeah.
Have you given lectures about this also?
I do lectures and workshops. The theater, we do lectures and workshops there. We're doing online courses right now. We have a Facebook.
To who and for what and on what?
Anyone is interested in attending. We'll bring in guests, magicians sometimes. Sometimes we'll have David Parr, who has been on Penn & Teller.
You're talking about you would teach people about how to do these shows.
That's correct. Yes.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or how to do magic in general or storytelling. Mm-hmm. In case we also do workshops on marketing and website design and social media. Mm-hmm. How to make sure you're doing those things correctly and adopting modern sensibilities on things.
Right.
Which is all important for the modern magician. So we do all our, but those workshops and classes, I do workshops and classes on magic, on murder mysteries, on theming, on scripting, and how to make a unique performance. I recently did an article for Vanish Magazine on contemporary bizarre magic as well. Mm-hmm.
What episode or what issue was that? Do you remember what month?
The latest one, October 2020.
October 2020. Gotcha. Certainly, living in the digital age, that people are more likely to ask more intelligent questions because they can Google something on their phone during the show. It's like, is this real? And then ask you about it afterwards. Do you find that to be the case occasionally, like about Titanic or finding facts?
100%, yes. Yeah, they will do that. Yeah. But there's things you can get away with, too, as long as it's not too interesting that they feel like they have to Google at the moment. For example, I have a character named A.B. Walden in one of my shows. And I tell people, so he was a pharmaceutical magnate at the time of his life. He was Walden Drugs, which was a company, and it was actually the precursor for Walgreens. It's totally made up. None of that's true.
Yeah.
The guy didn't exist. There's no Walden Drugs, at least not his Walden Drugs, and Walgreens was always Walgreens, but people, you'll see people in the audience going, oh yeah, I remember, I know that. Yeah. You know, just like they just because you're saying to him 100% correctly. You know,
I think that's the Mandela effect. Is that right?
It is to some degree. Yeah, you can argue that point. Yep. There's a watch trick I do where I tell people that this is what time the watch says. And I'm kind of giving this away, but I'm not really worried about it because only a few people have the confidence to do it anyway. Yeah. I tell the people, this is the watch. This is what time it is. And they just take it for granted. That's what time it is. And I said, no, look, it's another time.
Well, today also, and I mean just this generation, there are some people who just can't read analog watches.
That's correct.
To begin with. Yeah. And I've learned that through experience also. They can tell time if it's digital and a readout, but they just can't tell. They haven't been taught in school how to read analog. Interesting.
Yep, there's a little bit more to it than that, of course. And if you want to know how to do that watch trick specifically yourself, you can buy one of my books on library.com.
There you go. Well, as we start to close, exactly right. I wanted to hit some of those things as far as where people might be able, first of all, to attend the workshop or the classes that you're teaching. Tell a little bit more about that and where they can get in touch with you on that.
Well, the physical classes are suspended right now.
Okay.
But we'll restart those again in 2021. Mm-hmm. And we have online classes we're going to be doing from there's a Facebook group right now, and we're going to expand to a website. I'll make an announcement about the website eventually. We just want to make sure we have all our, you know, pigs in together in the proper holes. But we will have the Facebook group is called Poe's Magic Academy. We have guest speakers in there, but you can go there and sign up for it now. It was regional originally to just the Mid-Atlantic, but we're expanding it to internationally. International groups and individuals who are interested in that. We have a lot of diverse and amazing performers coming in doing lectures and workshops. And it's at no charge. You know, just we send out a Zoom link and there we go. We come in and learn about whatever you want to learn.
Is it on a regular basis?
We're trying to do them weekly. We skip a week every once in a while just so we can take a break. But we're trying to do it weekly on Tuesdays and or Wednesdays.
And they are still resident on the Facebook page. You can go back and watch some of the other things that people have taught in the past.
Not yet. That's something else we're working on too. Or at the moment, it's a live stream and then it's over. But we will be doing a back catalog eventually when we decide to move ahead further when the website's up. That's when we'll start doing that. But right now, it's a live stream and that's pretty much it.
Gotcha. And as far as contacting you for people who might be interested in working at Poe's Theater, they're
PoeSmagic.com. PoeSmagic.com. Everything, it's everywhere on social media at PoeSmagic. And it's PoeSmagic.com is the website. There is a sign up form if you want to go there and be interested in performing at PoeSmagic. And I want to put emphasis on this. If you're a magician and you want to come out and when they reopen, if you want to come out and hang with us, you can do that. Just come and hang out with us. You know, sure. I give out a few free tickets every once in a while to magicians interested in coming and hanging out with us before and after show. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to drop any big names, but we have regional magicians in the Baltimore, Annapolis, D.C., Philadelphia area who come in and hang out with us all the time. I cannot say the names, but sure, because they like a certain degree of like we want
anonymity.
To pop in.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you feel like it, but you can meet.
Plus, you don't want to leave out somebody because they're saying, wait a minute, I can hang out there too, and I'm somebody.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. They know who I'm talking about.
Exactly.
we do have some significant names that come out and hang out with us and have drinks in the restaurant and bar that's in it's at the Lord Baltimore Hotel in downtown Baltimore. We do want to open up again soon, as soon as we're told we can. Mm-hmm. And we're renewed to the end of, basically 2022 at this point. At some point, Poe's Magic will be back in Baltimore. And we're doing virtual shows now.
And that's Poe's Magic, P-O-E-S Magic, for people who haven't read Edgar Allan Poe, which you should, by the way, too.
P-O-E-S-M-A-G-I-C.com. Yeah, everything at Poe's Magic on social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. And we even have a Tumblr page, I think. I don't know, but we have all that.
Well, Well, as we close, then also the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word Podcast, and I always like to close by asking my guests what it is that is their philosophy of life. What is your phrase or your magic word?
Oh,
what do you live by? What's important?
That's a good one. I have a few things. I do like to say never underestimate stupid. which is something which basically means if a person can do that thing, they will do that thing. So just be prepared for everything. That just means to have a backup plan, have an app, you know. And but in a positive way, I'm very optimistic about the future, and I'm very positive about the potential for a person to be better. You know, that's overall philosophy. You know, there's people should be good to each other. And I think that, you know, it's, you know, magic has a reputation for being a form of entertainment for the ego. But a lot of my magic friends are wonderful people. You know, I think the vast majority of magicians are wonderful people that love their audience.
Yes.
And that's the kind of philosophy I embrace. Love your audience and love your friends. Embrace magic, and remember that it's you're sharing wonder with your audience, and that should be the main goal of your performance.
Of every performance, yeah, to share wonder. I like that then too. Well, great, Vince. Thank you very much. I appreciate you being my guest and sharing a lot of really great ideas. This has just been a fast hour.
Thank you. It has been an hour, hasn't it?
This has been great. It's over the Magic Word Podcast. That was Vince Wilson. This is Scotty out.
That was fun.
That was interesting, educational, and informative. I thank you very much, Vince, for your comments. It was great to have you on as a guest this week on the episode. I really learned a lot. It was really a lot of fun. One of those kinds of things that I think some of us can take to heart and perhaps employ in our next year's performance whenever that we prepare for Halloween. The idea being is that since it's just less than 2 weeks away, that we really are a little bit late in trying to get something going for right now. But the kinds of suggestions you make, I think, are great that we should put to work for next year, certainly. And if you want to do something throughout the rest of the year, certainly any time is a good time for some sort of entertaining and storytelling or bizarre magic. Well, I mentioned the first of this episode that we were going to be announcing the names of a couple of winners who are the lucky recipients of a set of books from Gabe Fiore. Gabe had offered us these books a couple of weeks ago whenever that he was on the episode. And these books are called The Golden Age of Magic Posters, the Norm Nielsen Collection of Magic Posters. This was, again, a beautifully illustrated book of posters that were available when these posters went up for auction. And again, there was a part one and a part two, beautifully reproduced on beautiful paper, hardback books. And I purchased my copies, and you guys who are the ones who will receive these are very lucky, because I know that you'll enjoy it. We had a great turnout from people who had entered this contest this week, so I know there is a lot of interest in this. And so if you're not a winner, that you can always go to Potter & Potter Auctions and order a copy, because I know that they have some still available there. So let's get right to it. The winners of the contest for the Golden Age of Magic Posters are Chu Alicia and Colby Higgs. Congratulations to you. I appreciate everyone who had entered the contest, and as we know, of course, there could only be two winners, and so if your name was not drawn, just go to potterauctions.com, and you can navigate to where that you can purchase your copies of these books then also. This week, as always, our podcasts are brought to you by the Friends of the Magic Word, and from time to time, we have a few people who will donate or perhaps pledge their financial support, and I appreciate each and every one of my Friends of the Magic Word, and everyone who becomes a Friend of the Magic Word gets some pretty good perks along the way then, too. For those who might be interested in making a financial pledge, please go to themagicwordpodcast.com, and there you will see a tab where you can join the Friends of the
magic word, and you can click on that, learn a little bit more information, and then be taken to a site where that you can make your donation or your financial pledge. Thank each and every one of you for your financial pledge. And if you can't get around to doing that, or it's a difficult time, or you don't have the financial means, you can always help us out by giving us a 5-star review on iTunes. If you are not an iTunes user, whatever way that you listen to your podcast, I'm sure there's something that you can go in there and post some sort of a nice comment. We always like to read those, and also it helps our podcast to grow as well. And be sure to subscribe to our pod letter each week, so this way that you know what's going to be happening and what contests are coming up and some suggestions from the archives, etc. So until next week, stay well, get booked, and try to share wonder with every audience with your magic. This is Scotty out.